Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 38, Storytelling, Part 1. If the teaching of arithmetic and form drawing represent the impulse of the spirit that lives in the first grade curriculum, then we certainly must say that storytelling, in its many shapes and forms in Grade 1, represents the soul forces of that year. And indeed, storytelling will continue to play a large role throughout the grades. Again and again, we are going to be taking all kinds of information, knowledge, perhaps now and then some wisdom, and putting it into the form of a narrative for our students. Not for everything by any means, and as we go up the grades, there are other ways of presenting things as well. But certainly for most of the years ahead of you, for most of the subjects that you're going to teach in the immediate future, storytelling is very important. Before I start to give you another shopping list of the kinds of stories you'll be telling, I want to say that storytelling is in and of in itself a form of speech, of course. And the importance ascribed to storytelling in the Waldorf curriculum only shows us how important the medium of the spoken word is in all that we do. That is one of the most salient points of the Waldorf curriculum. It's interesting, we speak of the importance of the arts and the fact that a teacher may remain with a class for 6 years or even 8 years and so on, but very rarely is it said, this is also an educational methodology in which the teacher's speech serves a multiplicity of roles and substitutes many times for a textbook, for a computer, for a bulletin board, for the many things that you won't find in a Waldorf classroom, because it is the teacher's speech that is really conveying what these many other media may have to do in a school where the teacher's spoken word is very unimportant, except as a means of classroom management or discipline or something punitive like that. So this is important, and we don't really talk about this enough and appreciate it enough. And I want to just point to another aspect of this, that from day one, from the moment you tell your story in the assembly, or certainly from the moment you shake hands with a child and greet him or her on that very first day, your speech is a model for the children. In the kindergarten, the sense of sight is very important. The children are watching, and imitating so much of what they see in particular. As we come into the grades, the child's sense of hearing becomes a central means of perception, of understanding the world, of apprehending the world, of uniting themselves with the world. And your speech is the speech that they hear most frequently, and certainly what they're listening to first thing in the morning when their powers of wakefulness and will are so heightened. So watch your speech, watch your language, and dare I say it, because it's often a sensitive matter with people, especially in the United States, watch your grammar. Make sure that you are speaking clearly and grammatically to the children. And although we don't speak about grammar in language arts yet, that really doesn't come in until grade 3, when we give the children the parts of speech, and then grade 4, when we place an emphasis on tense. So even now, though, we still have to be sure that we are helping the children speak English or their native tongue correctly. which means not written exercises and not didactic teaching, as it were, in the classroom, but rather that when the children speak to us and make a grammatical error, we gently correct it. This is the time when it is proper to do this. Kindergarten would not be the time, and for most children, they wouldn't really understand what's being said because they're just imitating what's around them. And certainly in the United States, there is not a whole lot worth imitating, including the speeches of our presidents, including the way in which even fairly educated people, let's say in the world of technology, talk about their ideas and what they're doing for the world. If you feel that awesome is a sufficient way of expressing about 832 different emotions and responses to the world, fine. But if you'd like to expand the children's vocabularies, expand your own. If you would like them to have examples of good grammar, proper grammar, don't depend on the world around them. And you can't even depend with certainty on their parents anymore, because their education was probably just as lacking in a real attention to the refinement of the English language as maybe yours was, or certainly what most people in North America in general. So you have to make those corrections, which is to say, when a child comes up to you at recess time and says, "I'm done with my snack, can I go out?" What do you say? "May I go out?" "Yeah, can I go out?" No, please say, "May I go out?" "Oh, may I go out?" All right, the child made that correction. Very likely tomorrow, once again, because the word can, instead of may, is deeply implanted in this child's etheric body, you're going to get can again and again and again. You are going to have to be very patient and very persistent. Big smile on your face. Maybe now and then find a funny way of bringing it, but bring it again and again and again, because though it takes longer after the change of teeth, the imitative side of the child is still awake. It's still functional. It is for us as adults as well. And the first step of learning in everything at any age has an imitative quality. So they're going to be imitating you, and you're not going to let go of their hand or whatever it may be. You're not going to let them go outside until they've said it correctly. So that's one big one. Can instead of may when asking permission, you know. And of course, yes, you certainly can, but you may not yet because you haven't asked me properly. You know, don't get too huffy-puffy about it, but nonetheless, simply bring up that this is good grammar. And no arguing about it. You'll have plenty of time for arguing about grammar in the upper grades. Don't you worry. The children will bring every exception to every rule, and they will, you know, bring in presidential speeches and a talk given by the president of Harvard or whatever. And you'll have wonderful times battling that one out. But right now it is simply, this is how your teacher speaks to you. This is how you respond to your teacher. Of course, the other big one is I and me. Can me and Johnny go out for recess? No, you put me after Johnny. But is that alone what's correct? It's not just can Johnny and me. Can Johnny, may Johnny and I? Now, you don't have to explain to them the difference between nominative and predicate and something that's the subject and something that's the object, but this is simply the proper way of asking. Right now, all they need is the form, the grammatical form, and you gently correct that, and then in time, they'll learn why. They'll learn the rules, and that's where their own logical capacities will make them want to find the exceptions as well. But right now, your way of speaking is the rule. So refresh yourself on that if there's some confusion there. The basic problems are going to be I and me, can and may, and especially subjects and objects, objects of prepositions. This is an area where adults often feel a little uncertain, so they will sometimes, to compensate, treat the object of a preposition like its subject. So this is an important conversation. This is just between you and I. Very commonly said, incorrect nonetheless. This is between you and me. Between is a preposition, and both you and me are its objects. So freshen up on that and pay careful attention to it. And also, don't use adjectives instead of adverbs. You know, you did that really, what, good? No, you did that really well. You did that well, because well is also modifying to do, and really is modifying well. Adverbs can modify other adverbs or adjectives or whatever. So these are important little nuances, and what you do in first grade casts its light or its shadows very far into the next grades. You know, it's not that, well, I'm not that great at grammar, and but this is only first grade. I'll hone that down when I get into third grade and fourth grade, when it really matters. It really, really matters the most now. Before it's written, before the children even know you're talking about grammar, they're going to get wonderfully spoken sentences, perfectly grammatical, from their Spanish teacher or their Mandarin teacher. And it's important that the person speaking the native tongue to them is also as meticulous about his or her grammar as well. As you can see from the table of contents, we have several lectures ahead of us dealing with storytelling. So I'm going to here give you again this little list of the kinds of stories that you will undoubtedly be telling to your first graders. Number one, introducing materials to children. Number two, nature stories. Number three, what we call pedagogical stories, though I think sometimes the term therapeutic stories might be better than that, but pedagogical stories is the usual label given to them, so I'll use that as well. And fairy tales. So four kinds of stories, and in addition to that, we should also find other situations in which we are creating little narratives. I mentioned one to you in regard to lunchtime, that you find ways of stimulating conversation by telling one or another little anecdote about something that happened to you. So turn something very small into a story. That might be called conversational stories, but I think it would fit under the other categories as well. So that's what we have ahead of us, and we will begin by looking at stories that introduce materials to children in our next lecture.